to 70 protesters arrested. The latest wave of detentions against the US anti-corporatism campaign. Stay with News Analysis as we asked how the Occupy movement has affected American society.
Education should be free, no cuts, no peace. Education should be free, no cuts, no peace.
Thousands of students protesting cuts to higher education are condemning the decision in the state capital, California. Masses of demonstrators have been arrested. Police say the detainees will be charged with trespassing. Many of those arrested are affiliated to the Occupy Sacramento group, which is part of the anti-Wall Street movement. Earlier, police arrested four Occupy movement protesters in West Palm Beach in southern Florida for defying an eviction notice. The Americans participating in the anti-Wall Street protests call themselves the 99 percenters. They say the U.S. political establishment favors the rich, who they say constitute only 1% of the U.S. population. The anti-Wall Street protesters are also angry at what they describe as, quote, corporate greed, blaming big companies for America's economic ills. Police have cracked down on the protests ever since they began. They've rounded up at least 6,700 anti-Wall Street demonstrators over the past 6 months.
You should be in South America, some oppressive regime. You can beat fellow citizens day in, day out.
The crackdown on the demonstrations comes as the U.S. has always portrayed itself as a defender of human rights and freedom of speech across the world, using the two issues as political leverage to exert pressure on other nations.
Well, joining me now live from San Francisco is Professor Mark Mason, an Occupy movement protester. Thanks very much for being with us. I'd also like to welcome our guest in Washington, Dr. Webster Tarpley, author and historian, and also joining us from Calgary is Mr. Joshua Blackney, staff writer of Veterans Today. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. I'll put my first question to our guest in San Francisco, Professor Mason. First of all, let's start with the issue of detentions. The number of arrests is growing. 6,700 protesters we're hearing over the past 6 months. First of all, what does this number indicate? That the protests are getting out of control?
Oh, it's an indication that the popular uprising in the United States that's labeled the Occupy movement, that it's a successful grassroots movement to shift power away from corporate America and to shift power away from the bankers on Wall Street back into the communities where it belongs. It's an indication of the effectiveness of the Occupy movement.
So you say this is a sign that the Occupy movement is being effective. Let's put that to Dr. Tarpley in Washington. Now, the way that the police has been treating these protesters, Dr. Tarpley, the police saying, like, we have to get involved because we don't want things to become violent. The protesters, on the other hand, they're saying that, no, this is a systematic crackdown on the protests. So basically, what's your belief on this?
Well, naturally, we're in the realm of class struggle and the mass strike, so repression is inevitable. The question is, can you win? I think your focus is a little bit narrow in the sense that the Occupy Wall Street is really the tail end of something bigger, which is what started in Madison, Wisconsin last February, the Occupy Madison, which was a general strike to shut down the entire state, fighting a fascist governor, Walker, who wanted to destroy all the unions. And this is ongoing. The people in Wisconsin were able to gather 1 million signatures, the biggest effort proportionally of that type in the history of the United States that's ever happened. This is where the action is. We also have in Michigan right now, signatures have been gathered to stop the fascist governor of that state, Snyder, from taking over the city of Detroit, essentially ending democracy and ruling it as a dictator. We've unfortunately had a defeat in Indiana where the union-busting bill has gone through with Governor Mitch Daniels, but we've also got a victory in Ohio where the movement there was able to defeat the fascist Governor Kasich, by 61% to 39%. It was, of course, when the communications workers, the transport workers, the teachers came to Wall Street, that Zuccotti Park demonstration, that really got going and got on the map. So it's a mass strike. The problem we have is it's not successful in the Occupy Wall Street. The Zuccotti Park, I think you'd have to say, is a failure. Success would be, are you on your way to 100 members of the House of Representatives? Are you on your way to 10 senators? Have you forced through the Wall Street sales tax? Have you stopped foreclosures? Mm-hmm. Are you on your way to seizing the Federal Reserve? In other words, what have you done to concretely smash the power of finance capital? And we'd have to say the Occupy model with the facilitators and the consensus and the 90% threshold to get anything approved, this has not been successful. And I think anybody who wants to repeat that should have his head examined. It's time to come on to a different approach, especially you've got to put forward hard-hitting class-based demands.
Joshua Blackney, would you also say that it's not been successful?
Well, I've participated in Occupy Vancouver and Occupy Calgary, and unfortunately what we've seen is a kind of crackdown. Of course, it was Adbusters in Vancouver that was actually the instigator of Occupy Wall Street. And I'd pick up the historical narrative slightly before where Webster picks it up with the events in Madison. I'd really pick it up with the Arab Spring. Of course, the events in the Middle East of trying to oust and defenestrate those like Hosni Mubarak, we were told this was an Arab Spring just for Arab people. But increasingly, it became apparent to those of us in North America and in Western countries that really the Hosni Mubaraks, I mean, are they any different to the Barack Obamas, the Stephen Harpers, you know, kind of puppets of various lobbyists and those who own capital? And so I see really the Occupy movement as being a manifestation of the Arab Spring in the West, as it were. And so I agree with Webster that there needs to be a less kind of postmodern, kind of decentralized approach to formulating goals and and you know, an agenda that we can bring to the politicians and demand that we have some justice in the world. And I think that personally we need to understand that our governments are occupied themselves by lobbyists, and that in a sense the Occupy movement is kind of emergency measures. You know, after the fraudulent events of 9/11, we kind of were told we need the Patriot Act and we need emergency measures. But in fact, I think what we're seeing with Occupy, where people coming to their public squares, is the implementation of a kind of people's emergency measures, because it's just getting too intolerable. The kind of polarization, the, you know, the rich getting richer, the poor getting poorer, students having to get into tens of thousands of dollars of debt just to get a basic education. Okay. And so I view the Occupy movement as continuing, even though these bylaws have been used to oust those who had occupied their public squares.
Right. So, Professor Mason, I'd like to have your response. When you say then that the movement has been effective in its own way, explain to us how effective it's been.
The Occupy movement is part of the global popular uprising that was stimulated or initiated by the 2008 global economic collapse. I wouldn't place the origin of it in Wisconsin. The Occupy movement learned much from the failure of Wisconsin. Wisconsin was a gross failure, operated primarily by the unions. They played by the rules. The courts told them to go home, and they went home. And the Occupy movement is being criticized for not playing by the party politics. And I would suggest that that's not an accurate or appropriate criticism, because the Occupy movement has no interest in party politics, none whatsoever. The movement is only 6 months old. Let's recall, it just only began in September, and many of the other Occupy occupations began in November.
Right.
And here we are. Basically, we have commanded the public media, the corporate media is listening to the Occupy movement message. And even the President of the United States has decided to move the IMF meeting from Chicago to a military compound, Camp David. And so the Occupy movement is effective. It's not interested in party politics. It's not interested particularly in specific legislation or specific candidates for public office. It's a systemic change that's being driven by a popular movement that's worldwide.
Right. When you say that, then, Dr. Tarpley, I know you want to give a response to that. But basically, when we are speaking of how can this movement be effective, is it about, as our guest in Calgary was saying, giving specific agendas, setting out, outlining demands? Or when you mean that they haven't been successful, what do you mean they should be doing to have that effect that you're speaking about?
The goal of revolution is to take power. It's not to change the conversation or to force the moving of a meeting from one place to another. I think this is a pitiful, pathetic scale of expectation. You've got to dare to struggle to dare to win. And winning again means getting 100 representatives into the House of Representatives to fight for the measures that you want, getting 10 senators, forcing through some legislation. We could have had a Wall Street sales tax, a 1% tax on all Wall Street turnover passed last autumn. That could have been forced through the Congress with the right kind of leadership. Hit Wall Street where it hurts. Make them pay. Break their power. Smash their stranglehold over all the engines of this government. The problem, of course,
Mr. Tarpley, you're saying that this is, you're calling this a revolution then, and this, you're saying that it lacks leadership, then that's the problem.
It had better be. If you want to take power, you've got to have demands, right? We have David Graeber, the mush-headed anthropologist who seems to be the guru of this movement. I think he operates from London. He went to Yale and now he's in London. Graeber says, no, we shouldn't have any demands. I'll go with Frederick Douglass. This is wisdom. Frederick Douglass said, power concedes nothing without a demand. If you want something, you better get out there and demand it. Adbusters, that was just mentioned, I really wonder who they are. What is their relation to NATO intelligence? They come on as the Situationist International. Well, that was founded by NATO intelligence to destabilize General de Gaulle of France back around 1960. Who are these people?
Well, Dr. Tarpley, if I could stop you there, you say that they need to come up with their demands, that they have to voice their demands. Well, up until now, we have been hearing some demands, of course, the taxes on the rich that people have been calling for, all the different measures that they've been saying need to be done to ensure that social and political equality. Our guest in Calgary, Joshua Blackney. So basically, do you think that in spite of the fact that demands have been voiced, at least to some extent, the problem would be that the Obama administration, the authorities, have chosen to ignore those demands?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we have to bear in mind that there's been a quite brutal crackdown on those who are the occupists, those who are participating in the Occupy movement. I mean, in a way, the crackdown has vindicated many of the allegations against the government that we have no constitution anymore. I mean, you have these kind of lofty principles of the right to assemble, freedom of speech, but invariably what you have happening is local bylaws that say, oh, you can't put up a tent in your town square. They've been trumping and superseding the supreme laws of the country. That happened here in Calgary, where I am. There was a court trial, Occupy Calgary versus the City of Calgary, and the City of Calgary was supported by the judicial decision, and he said, yes, the bylaws are superseding the supreme right, you know, of citizens to assemble and to have freedom of speech. Likewise, in Vancouver, it was the same, although I would agree that the demands do need to be more explicit and more lucid. When I went to Vancouver on October 15th, 3 days or 4 days after that, we had George W. Bush visiting Surrey, British Columbia, which is just outside Vancouver. Now, in Canada, we have a Crimes Against Humanity and War Crimes Act and an Immigration and Refugee Protection Act, both of which are unambiguous that people who have confessed to having participated and authorized torture are inadmissible to Canada. Mm. And many jurists and lawyers have drawn attention to that. Now, I nominated that at Occupy Vancouver as an obvious cause. I don't think there was anyone there who would say George Bush shouldn't be arrested. But unfortunately, there was this kind of ethos, this decentralized kind of anarchistic ethos, that we shouldn't have any leadership and anyone kind of telling other people what they should think and what they should do. And I think I do concur with Dr. Tarpley on that point, that this has kind of led to a kind of malaise where those in power are actually not being prompted hard enough to reckon with the masses who are seething with rage. Iniquitous policies.
I'll come back to that question. But Professor Mason, just let's focus again on the response that the protesters have been getting. Right now, we're listening into a press conference announcements by President Obama, and he was saying things about the housing crisis. He introduced, in his words, the cheaper government-backed mortgages, which were unveiled by the White House. So basically, do you think that the Obama administration has actually practically been addressing the exact demands that these protesters have been voicing? Have these voices been heard or been addressed by the administration?
President Obama has no credibility, and we have a country that's run by the American oligarchs. I'm accustomed to hearing in the media, the popular press, about the Russian oligarchs. Well, in the United States, we have the American oligarchs. And the measures that put forward by President Obama are devious at best. They are another hidden bank bailout and an opportunity for banks to get out from underneath crimes, vast crimes of fraud perpetrated against millions of people in the United States. So we have a political system where the president's not credible and nothing he says can be taken at face value. Mm-hmm. We have a popular movement that's the Occupy movement. It's not interested in replacing one face with another face in the White House. I'm on a committee that's working towards setting up and convening a constitutional convention under Article 5 of the Constitution that mm-hmm. permits the people to assemble to rewrite the Constitution. That's what Occupy is all about. Nothing to do with replacing one face with another face mm-hmm. or one oligarch with another oligarch. I want to mention 1986 in the Philippines. What does this have to do with the United States? The people went into the streets, they overthrew the dictator Marcos, and they went home, just like the people in Wisconsin. They went home. And right. what happened? They replaced the dictator with basically a corporate oligarch, mm-hmm. and nothing has changed. If anything, we're going to learn something. I was in the streets in 1968. Cal State Northridge, state cops were chasing me. I was young enough to avoid being arrested because I could run fast enough.
Right.
We went home in 1968 to 72,
issue again, we went home.
Occupy is not going home, and we're not playing this party politics.
I'm sorry to stop you because we're short of time. Dr. Tarpley, basically when you say you're criticizing this movement for not being strong enough, you're calling it a revolution, there's been a question asked very frequently now, I'm hearing in the media in the U.S. and elsewhere, should this movement become violent? Should this movement get involved in actions that could be construed as violent? Tell us what you mean then by that.
No, of course not. And only an anarchist lunatic, a police agent, would recommend such a thing. You've got to build your strength with demands. Once you've got Zuccotti Park, let's say, the main rule of the mass strike is spread the strike, bring in new groups, bring in labor, bring in women, blacks, Hispanics, bring in soldiers, have something to say about war and peace. They didn't even have that. There was no comprehensive anti-war demand made until very, very late in the day. Don't listen to adbusters in Vancouver, British Columbia. Forget about David Graeber. You've got to show, if you've got a group of students and homeless in a park, you've got to show that you're willing to fight for the other people in the society. You better be fighting for a Wall Street sales tax to pay for unlimited unemployment benefits, 99 weeks plus. Stop all foreclosures. We had that. The Fraser-Lemke Act of the 1930s. Medicare for all. Anybody who wants it gets it. Seize the Federal Reserve and start issuing $1 trillion tranches of credit. You've got to get out there. You can't offer people a utopia. You can't tell working people that they should come and enjoy the utopian right. thrill of being in a commune in a park. They can't do that. You've got to get out there and show that you're fighting for them. Then when the police come after you, they'll be willing to fight for you. The failure of Zuccotti Park is that they weren't willing to fight for anybody.
Right. If I could just stop you there, Dr. Tarpley.
And when the time came, nobody was willing to fight for them.
Yeah, we've just got under 3 minutes left until the show ends in Calgary. Mr. Blackney, I'd just like to point to something else here, and that's the upcoming presidential elections in the United States. When our guest in San Francisco, Professor Mason, is saying this is not about changing a face, do you think that this movement has at least led to a mistrust in the political system in the United States, the way that elections are held, the two-party system? Them. How is that going to translate in the elections?
Well, I think the U.S. one-party state, you know, with two competing factions is bereft of credibility, frankly. And I'm a little less pessimistic and a little more sanguine than Dr. Tarbley and a little more patient, you know. My experience is that my friends who were occupying in their tents, they haven't completely dissipated. Nearly every weekend they're out organizing and coming together in order to try and find, formulate policies that they can promote, you know, and causes that they can advocate. And it's not the case that this is, you know, completely over. We've got the summer coming. And I'd be a little bit more patient than Dr. Tarpley. I think that the point with the Occupy movement was it was highly eclectic. My experience was there were people who were in the green movements, people who cared about food, people who cared about anti-war causes. And there is a kind of a preliminary steps that are needed in order to come together and find out where we agree,
right,
where we
Mr.
disagree.
Blackney, I'll just stop you there if
and
I may.
I think that, you know, the future is one where...
Yeah, I'll just stop you if I may. I'd just like to give the last minute to Professor Mason. So, Professor Mason, do you think that this means a lack of trust in the both parties? In less than a minute, if you can tell us.
The system is broken. The system is broken in Russia, it's broken in Egypt, it's broken in the United States. And the long-term goal of Occupy is a systemic change to shift power from the 1% to the 99%. That can't be done in one election, although this is a very important election year. I do want to say that I appreciate the opportunity for us to discuss this today in the studio, but I would like to remind myself even that people are in the streets, the Occupy movements are in the streets today, these past weeks, preventing people from being thrown out of their homes. Mm-hmm. Real people in the Occupy movement are in the real streets,
right,
blocking home foreclosures, saving people from being thrown out of their homes.
Professor Mark Mason joining us there live from San Francisco. He's an Occupy movement protester. Thank you very much, sir. A big thank you as well to Dr. Webster Tarpley, author and historian, joining us live from Washington, and also in Calgary with us, Joshua Blackney, staff writer of Veterans Today. Thank you very much for being with us. I'm afraid we've run out of time. From Miho Maleski and the rest of the team here in Tehran, until our next news analysis, it's goodbye.